5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is CogDog, and I'm live with my friends here on the deck. This is a deck cast from Windsor, Ontario, which, believe it or not, and I still find hard to believe, is south of Detroit. There's a piece of Canada sitting south of Detroit. Most of you know that.
There's a lot of Canada sitting south.
There's a lot of Canada. There's like a secret Canada, right?
There is.
Right.
The Banana Belt.
The Banana Belt. What's the Banana Belt?
That's Windsor and Essex County.
Okay.
And we're below Detroit, and we grow Osage oranges and prickly pear cactus natively.
And Carolinian forests.
And Carolinian forests.
What about bananas?
Oh, Colasanti's has a nice crop.
Yeah. Inside.
Yeah. So let's do a round of intros. So our five listeners out there know who we got here. So to my right
is Doug Peterson. You may know me as Doug Pete. And to my right
is Diane Bedard, otherwise known as Windsor Die, not Winsorty.
I like Winsorty.
You like Winsorty. Okay.
And Andy Forgrave, A. Forgrave on Twitter.
That's excellent. And this is first. This is like I get to add three new people
Woo-hoo!
To my first time internet friends meetup. So that counts for my word stats. And I have to say, Windsor Die, we've had a great connection over Flickr over the years, and lots of good stories came out of that. But I have to say, so far you've given the best hello hug. And it's hard to top because Darren Kurapatwa in Winnipeg, he almost like squoze the breath out of me. So I like a good strong hug. That's good for me.
I'll remember that in case I ever have the chance.
Okay, so keep that in mind.
Do you need a hug, Doug?
The world needs more hugs. So we're sitting here on the deck of Windsor Die's house in Windsor, Ontario, and she did a little bit of touring around. We went down to the water where she takes all her pictures of the boats coming in, and you're like an encyclopedia.
Thank you. And I resemble that remark.
No, I mean that in the highest form, like the cool kind of encyclopedia. It's just the information you shared and you know, the little bits of geekery that you unveil about yourself. It's been great to be here and to hang out with Andy, who I've kind of peripherally crossed paths on Twitter.
I should say, because I arrived here late last night at Diane's, and I was going to write about this, but I'll just talk about it. Typically, you arrive at someone's place to visit, and they get you set up with the amenities, the towels, and show you where the washroom is and all this kind of stuff. And Diane went this extra step in saying, now, we need to get you on the Wi-Fi. And so she recognizes the importance of being connected. And Diane, that was the first time when I ever gone to visit someone, before I went to sleep.
Before the towels, right?
Before I saw the towels later, but got on the internet. And then this morning, here's the workspace, here are the tools, you want to open up your computer and swap out the hard drive. So we've had a great visit so far, and so I'm having
Thank
a good
you.
Time being here.
Tech matters.
In my terms, my first meeting here was wonderful Patrice, who wanted to know what type of beer I wanted. But secondly, Diane said, well, you got to get on the network, and so she gave me this great big long key to get on the network.
Well, you're not going to read aloud.
What is the key, Doug?
No. Suffice to say, it's a lot of numbers and a lot of letters.
Bedard, 128 bits. So if you're in the neighborhood, please join us.
I like wood.
Oh, that too.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, bracket. I like wood bracket.
Star.
Okay, aspect. Cool.
So for those piping in on Twitter, hello to Stephen Hurley, who maybe I'll hope to meet for the first time tomorrow on my road back towards Toronto. And Zoe's
cool.
out there, and I see Alana. And
Zoe's on the Go Bus.
She's on the Go Bus.
From the bus.
Okay. So you're getting the bus cast, and
I've always wanted to meet Stephen and Alana. I have met Zoe on numerous occasions. But
I thought
the
you were going to say you wanted to get busted.
No. No, that's okay. No, I've always wanted to meet Alana and Stephen. I really do.
It's been interesting in my Canada travels. I mean, first of all, it seems like so many of the EdTech people know each other, but then they don't always know each other, you know? Huh. So it's interesting because
you know by names, you know by handles, but because of distances, you don't often know by faces.
Even in the, Toronto is a pretty dense area for you guys, right? In terms of how many EdTech people are here. Okay, just
dense,
killed the conversation.
Dense in many ways.
Everyone's just biting their tongue. not saying anything.
Uh-oh. I think
that's
think
four
I just
hours
did,
from here.
I think I did the equivalent of, like, insulting hockey.
No, know.
And you should know, Andy, when you and Pat were doing your little hockey banter out on the
right?
porch,
oh, yeah.
I recorded a little bit because
excellent,
beautiful, classic yeah. Canadian conversation.
Yeah,
throwing hockey,
a bit of hockey. We were talking about hockey, and we were also talking about This Is That.
Yes,
which on CBC Radio and available on their podcast app is a wonderful source of entertainment every week.
Real news.
Sounds like real news, but they come up with some of the best stories out there.
Ooh.
And
it's like real news, but more interesting.
It's like The Onion, if you know The Onion, but
it's like
on the
radio.
It's like
The News was.
And it sounds like the CBC.
Cool.
It is the CBC, but very entertaining, and many people listen. It's available as a podcast, and then they write comments about how they can't believe that Toronto's going to start charging for public use of the parks, you know, $2.25. They'll have officers wandering around, giving you a ticket if you don't have your purchase permit. And
will they take debit cards?
I don't know if they mentioned cards, but it was $2.25, and if you want to play frisbee or if you want to walk the dog, then there's an extra charge on top of that. But of course, people listen to this; it sounds real, and then they comment, and people are just
blown away.
Drawn in. You know, the first couple times I heard it, I thought, this is a really bizarre story. I'm sure that's where I heard the $3 coin. And I thought, well, that's just stupid.
I want a $3 coin.
Does it have a nickname?
Well, see, we have in Canada the loonie and the toonie.
Yeah.
But the word was they were going to come up with a $3 coin, and I thought, that's stupid.
That doesn't break down nice. Is it a tray?
I'm thinking it must have been a This Is That. Yeah. But shortly thereafter, they were talking about a $5 coin. So
no, that would make sense.
I don't know if they're going to do that or whether they're just going to make the plastic money, because Canadian money is going to be printed on plastic.
I was thinking like the coins would get progressively bigger and heavier.
They
so,
do.
I mean, your pants would really be
they
falling
do.
Down.
But they're going to go with
pants on the ground.
With
that's a style, isn't it?
Plastic money, you'll be able to see through certain parts of it. And I think they're
going
to start making
nice fabric
start with like the 100 this fall. And so I think I heard they were going to go down as far as the fives with that.
That would be horrible.
And it lasts an extra 2.5 times.
I take Canadian money and shred it and mix it with resin and put it in tubes and turn pens out of it. Plastic will be horrible to turn.
It might be harder. Maybe a paper shredder?
I'll have to use a fine confetti shredder, yeah.
Is that illegal to
shred money? I was going to say, you know that shredding money is illegal, right?
No, it isn't, because I buy mine pre-shredded from the mint. They sell it by the pound.
Okay.
Banks collect it, and then the mint sells it to you, American or Canadian.
And what do you do with shredded money?
It gets mixed with a polymer resin.
Oh, okay.
It gets put into a vacuum pack, sealed around a brass tube, and then you put it on a lathe, turn it down, and make pen parts with it.
Right.
So it's really rich. You know?
I've seen.
And I need to point out, I have one of those pens.
You have a pen.
That was a
you?
Gift to me from Diane.
Can we tell the pen story?
You can tell the pen story.
Because I've gotten to tell my end of it. I've never heard your end of the story.
My end was you posted wonderful pictures on Flickr about the wood bin you were building, and all the work you had been doing in your backyard and your deck, and this new bin you had built, storage shed, to hold your firewood. And then you showed the pictures of the firewood arriving, and all nicely neat. You'd spent a whole afternoon stacking. It was a beautiful stack. At which point, I did something I have never done on Flickr before. I sent a hate message. I said, "You are a horrible person. How dare you burn that? That is beautiful wood. There is spalding. There is black veining. It is incredibly rich. I could be turning beautiful pens out of this. Don't burn such beautiful wood." To somebody I didn't know well, but I was so passionate about my art that to see him saying how happy he was going to burn it. And I took the highlight box and I actually selected a half dozen of the prettiest
logs.
These
would be good pieces.
These would be excellent pieces. And now, I let it go.
Now, the other half, let me backtrack on the story here. So this was some Arizona scrub oak from two trees I had taken down the previous summer. And it's really dense.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle, it's black. And
beautiful black spalding through it.
It really wasn't dry enough, but I had tried splitting it just because I like throwing my axe at the wood. And I couldn't split it, so I bought some firewood from a local guy named Pat. And when he brought it over, I was just pointing out to him, just saying, you know, because we're making conversations, we're stacking the wood. And he said something like, "Oh, we call that blackjack or something like that." And he said, "You know, I've got my big splitter at the shop. I'll do it for you." So this is extra wood, and he got it into nice size pieces that work in my garage, and I posted that picture on Flickr when you sent
the hate message.
It wasn't a hate message. It was very passionate.
So you responded.
Yeah, and I don't know if you offered or I said it, I'll send you a piece.
He said, well, if you feel that way, I'll send you a piece. And I said, you send me a piece, I will turn you pens and send them back.
Right. And I'd seen your pictures before.
I gave you the link to some of my pen turning.
Right. So basically, and this is the best, I love tying this part of the story, I mailed a log to Canada.
And the log showed up here.
And nobody asked questions.
Express.
Yeah.
$44 frickin' dollars for a log.
Yeah.
Comes, I signed for it, and that was Saturday. So Saturday, I took it in the wood shop, put it down in front of the guys, and said, look what I got sent! And everybody's gathering around going, ooh, ooh, can you get more? And I said, it's a special source. So that log that he shipped got cut into 22 pen blanks.
And I got two.
And I took two of them, and I did a Triton gold fountain pen and a ceramic roller ball Schmidt executive pen, and very carefully packed them up and shipped them back to him in exchange for him having shipped me the log.
They're beautiful. That was a fair trade indeed.
It was. So he came today with a big box for me with other logs that I'd said that one and that one. Yay!
So that wood has traveled 7,500 miles with all the thorough test checking that Canadian Customs did in Sydney. They did not find it.
We won't mention that wood with bark and bugs and stuff is
it's in that bugs
here in Canada.
So the bark is bad.
It will get bagged and taken proper care of.
Yeah, you do need to take care of it just in case there's something you transport.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But Diane will do that.
I will do that. Yeah. It will be in a bag with raid and sealed for 24, 48 hours.
So,
oh, nice. No, excellent.
No. Just what we need in Essex County. Scorpions on the loose.
So Diane, when you turn pens, do you pay any attention to where the wood came from?
Always.
So you would keep track.
I know the history of every piece.
Single pen that you make from this particular wood, so it'll be they'll be extra special pens as a result. Now, do you number your pens when you make them, or
I take pictures and I number them in a database. I don't actually. This fall, I'll have access to the laser equipment, and I can start to laser etch some of the pens if I want. But I'm not sure that I want to mar the surface of a pen that way.
So, but you keep track of them.
But
so
I keep track of who received it and which pen it was.
You could.
I'd know the owner. Yes, and I know the history of the wood.
So you can track anything that you make from this wood.
Yeah.
And she does do a good job. I gotta tell you, the pen that I have is a beautiful pen.
Do you have one of the Lucite ones with the computer parts in it?
No.
Okay. So because I saw one that you did once,
yes.
I'm not sure who.
From pieces of motherboard.
Yeah. So motherboard pieces.
Motherboard makes a wonderful pen.
And then mixed into the Lucite or whatever that is.
You sand it fine, you heat wrap it around a steel pole, and then again, you resin it onto the brass tube for the pen and put the polymers around it and turn it down to make a pen.
So how's this sound, just as an idea, that as you continue to make these pens and they continue to find their way out into the world, what if you were to set up a little site where people could post stories
about their
pens? The pen and because I was talking with
I have a Flickr account where every pen is pictured, and anytime I give a pen to somebody, I let them know where their pictures are at.
But I'd be curious, I think what you're saying is like, what do people do with the pens?
Well, what do they do? Where do the pens go? Yeah. And so that over time, the story attached to a pen, the history, because things that have been written.
Well, you see, what I do when I know people are Twitter friends, Flickr friends, or Facebook friends, if I haven't met them before and in my travels I encounter them, or they come to me, they get a pen. And that's how it works.
I have to say, the pens have a beautiful heft to them. I mean, they're not heavy, but
they're serious pens.
They're serious pens. And I've never had a fountain pen before. So
it was
a real thrill to play with it.
Yeah.
So they're pretty darn special.
Well, thank you.
But and it's just really darn special to be here. I do, before I forget about it, want to give a big shout out to Heather Dernan and her family, who showed a lot of hospitality. I mean, not only did they like entertain me, feed me, take me out doing things on their farm. I rode a tractor, which I've never done before. Which Mike was very patient. I was sure I was going to take a corner out of their barn, but I think he would have grabbed the wheel. But and when I left, I mean, first of all, like, they gave me a gift when I left. Mike gave me a big barrel full of Canadian beer and some dried meat, and so it was a real thrill to be there. A big thing has been visiting people in their homes and seeing how they do, like, parent. I mean, they've got two really mature sons that I'm sure they're both proud of, really down-to-earth people, and that was wonderful. And then on the way here, I got to have coffee with Rod Lucier.
Clever Sheep.
Love Clever Sheep, yes.
Love Clever
Sheep. Again, someone I met for the first time in person, and true Great experience to spend an hour and a half with them. We told stories. I got a good long recording of him talking about the whole genesis of the Unplugged conference. And I feel kind of lucky because I'm like getting a chance to hang out with a lot of people who participated in it. So you probably talked about it a lot, but I'm just fascinated to hear people's experiences of going to what sounds to me like the most unusual kind of event.
Like, for me, it was like going to summer camp where you leave a whole bunch of the outside world behind. Everybody's kind of on a common footing. One of the nice things is that the food is kind of taken care of for you, so a lot of the things that you might do on a day-to-day basis, you're not worried about those. And without the distraction of the internet, and I think the Unplugged piece of it was really important, it meant people had lots of time to sit and talk about stuff and really focus on things that were important to them. Everyone came with a story that they wanted to share, and they came with a short essay about something that they felt was important in education. And so there was a bit of homework that you did in advance.
What kind of expectations did you have going into it?
Well, I mean, when the attendees were starting to assemble, I thought, this is an amazing group of people. Maybe half of them I'd never met before. So there were a lot of those first contacts where you meet people that you might have communicated with at a distance. But a lot of wonderful people to spend time with. And if anything, and I talked with Rod and Ben Hazard about this as we were leaving, that time is a very tricky variable to work with in this kind of situation. I felt at the end that the amount of time we had wasn't enough time. But I also appreciate that adding an extra day or an extra 2 days would significantly change the dynamic. So I don't know what the best answer for that is in terms of time, but having a removed location, just the metaphor of being on the edge of Algonquin Park, slightly removed from civilization, and yet with having a whole bunch of wonderful catalyst activities, canoeing, yoga, hiking, mountain biking, there were all kinds of opportunities for people just to talk about things and share.
I know, so when I talked to Darren, he described like an unexpected value in the journey together to the place, how you kind of gradually, like in steps, kind of disengage.
And see, I know I was wrestling with when to disconnect from the internet.
Yeah.
Because you know, there are some people for whom this seemed to be a bit of a
Dean Suresky.
a real concern. Very nice. Now I'm sure they were hamming it up a little bit.
Yeah.
But I was watching to see at what point will people put away their devices.
Yeah.
And the counterpoint, at what point will people take out their devices again? And really, I think once we got there, the devices were not in evidence. But I think that the way it happened, people traveling from across Canada, having a bit of a get-together in a fairly hospitable environment, and then gradually moving away, taking the train, and then going from the train, probably half of us rode the mountain bikes for 22 kilometers. That was interesting, because it was right in the noonday sun. But everybody gets there, and so it worked really well, I think, as an experience to set people up. So.
Now, I met with Danica last week, and she said 26 kilometers.
Oh, that would explain it.
Hills going up and down and up and down and up and down. So who's telling the truth? You at 22 or she at 26?
It's linear versus up and down and up and down.
So, I'm willing to go with Danica's number because it for me, it felt like a little bit more than what I would usually expect for 22. So maybe it was 26. If there's anyone who ever is cycling from the train station at South River to the edge, my one observation would be just to save a little bit of energy for the hill at the end. Just anticipate saving some energy for the hill at the end, and you'll have a pleasurable ride.
So what do you think, I mean, what do you foresee happening next from this experience?
I think every person who was there will take away different things that they will do as a result. And I came away with a list of things. I'm thinking that the organizers knew that things would come out of Unplugged, but that it would be impossible for them to predict all of the things that will happen. And I mean, the piece that I guess I would like to see is for anyone who's involved in education to have more of an opportunity to think about what is truly valuable and important to them, and have an opportunity to talk about it with other educators. Because we weren't sitting writing curriculum documents, we weren't sitting doing teacher-mediated marking, we weren't sitting listening to people doing presentations. We were talking about our beliefs, listening to one another's beliefs, sharing, reflecting, and I think it really gives more voice to the educators. And gives them more of an opportunity to process stuff. So I would hope that everyone could have that opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty rare to almost never opportunity for most people.
Well, I'm just looking around the table here and seeing 3 iPads, 2 smartphones, and a laptop open, and there's only 4.
Only 4 people.
Yes. So we're okay?
I don't have all my tech out here. That's the problem. I should go get more.
Yeah, you got a good supply in the house.
Well, you did say you had unlimited bandwidth.
That's why it's here.
Well, and Rod and I had this conversation at when we had coffee today. Usually our tendency is like, how am I going to capture this or record this? Or, am I going to take photos? Am I going to, blog about this later? And we were both kind of just engaged and just gave up and said, just want to experience this. And he said his experience at Unplugged was in watching people's communications, how there was just a lot more direct eye contact. And probably, I would imagine, a lot more active listening than typically goes on.
Yeah, not the one ear attuning.
Right, right. And we don't get that too often.
Just checking the Twitter stream here, Andy. Apparently, Alana agrees with you about that last hill.
That last hill.
I think yeah. It's up to 28 kilometers.
Actually, she used a word I didn't think you could use on the internet.
Ooh, what was that?
Was that a direct message? I didn't see that one.
Well, one of the things that was interesting for me was to meet Rod's twin brother, Todd.
Uh-huh.
And Todd was the sweep. And so by the time I got to the edge, the sweep was ahead of me. I was not at the end, but the sweep managed to drop an unplugged water bottle as he was going up that hill.
Hmm.
And, far be it for me to leave it lying there
on
the hill.
Of course, that would be
littered. So I had to stop and get off my bike to pick up the water bottle. And then the person behind me who wasn't anticipating that had to stop so that they didn't run into me. And then Kelly, who didn't get to make it here this evening, she started laughing for some reason. So a number of us had to stop.
And stop laughing.
And as you rarely stop when you're cycling, and certainly not on the hill. It was a great entry to that experience. And it wouldn't have been the same if I'd, just ridden on a bus or something.
Or showed up separately like you normally do.
Hmm?
Or showed up separately
well,
like you
yeah.
normally do.
Well, yeah. And I mean,
the
there were others who took different pathways to the edge. And we had activities, things on the train where people had a chance to meet people they'd never met before. And so just having that, it was probably a 2-hour bike ride. It was just another opportunity, and people were shifting places and taking pictures. And so a lot of things, I think, really thought out in advance and planned to create space for people to talk and communicate. And, it was not people presenting to a group of people basically listening. There was no back channel, which is very interesting.
Hmm.
And there was nothing buzzing in my pocket saying, hey, there's a little message you might want to pay attention to. And so, a lot of things really went and worked together to make it a very powerful experience.
Well, I hope I'm not the only one, but I was incredibly jealous just to hear people talk about it.
I remember talking with Rod and Zoe, who's on the bus. I'm thinking it was almost a year ago when Rod was floating the idea. And I thought, well, that sounds really interesting. And then I had 2 or 3 conversations with him. I think he was practicing his elevator pitch on what it was going to be. And eventually he and Zoe did a LiveScribe pencast that's there on the Unplugged website that sort of explains what it was going to be. And I remember the first time I really heard the vision of it, I thought, I would really like to be involved in this. If you want, I'll stand at the gate and open the gate as people are arriving or something like this. And I know I talked to a lot of people who just felt very privileged, I guess is probably the word, privileged to be there. And so I'm pretty sure they have plans for subsequent similar events. And if not, they will.
Cool. So, I mean, I have my little thing I want to talk about, but I'm curious, what sort of things that you're doing now that you're kind of excited or jazzed about? Maybe technology or wood, you know? But
go ahead, Doug.
What's keeping your juices flowing, Doug?
Well, it's kind of interesting you do because I'm really drawing a blank. I'm really focused on the events in Goderich of yesterday. I got to be perfectly honest with that. Growing up,
you might explain that
10 kilometers away from that, a huge tornado. They were saying it was F3 on the particular scale that went through and just sort of devastated things everywhere. I was watching the pictures as they were coming through in the London Free Press, which would be the closest to a major newspaper going through there. It was just devastating to see places that I went to as a kid or as a teenager or hung out and just, you know, just totally devastated. Very often a storm goes through and one place gets hit, but in this particular case, so many got hit. And I am just really curious because you were very close to that yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit north and east of it, and so you probably didn't get the brunt, but you must have felt the weather go through, and you must have had a sense from the people that were there as to what their feelings were about.
Well, they didn't know what was going on. I mean, actually, there were about four different storm systems that came through, and the sun would come out. And, you know, we went out on the quads, and it was raining, and by the time we got back in the barn, the sun had come out, and it happened again. The last round was really intense. It was hailing. It wasn't big hail. But mostly it's just like, wow, that's an intense storm. And it wasn't until, I think, a little bit later that Heather's sons were showing that there's already a Facebook page up with these incredible photos and images. And it's an old town. It's got a lot of historic buildings, apparently. And
yes.
It looked like the tornado just aimed right for it.
It almost looked like, in the center of Goderich, there's a square with, I think it's like eight-sided streets and octagonal layout, and the picture I saw, it almost like somebody had just picked up the tornado and dropped it right into the center of the square.
Yeah.
All the beautiful trees that I've known for years are now chopped down and in half places, and it's I just can't imagine that sort of thing happening anywhere. We had a big tornado go through here at Leamington couple years ago, and Leamington is still trying to recover from it. But
I have wood from that. I have tornado pins.
But the pictures I saw from Goderich just absolutely devastating.
Yeah.
Just words just can't describe how you feel.
Yeah,
about it.
Yeah. That kind of trivializes Facebook versus Google circles or.
But it's also
the new smart board or whatever. Yeah.
But it's also interesting to notice, as you pointed out, that Facebook is there to help people, and just following the news, I know there are a number of different hashtags for people to follow, where to go to get assistance, and people are, I think they're setting up for relief centers. There's a place in Wingham that's collecting things so that they can ship them down to the folks in Goderich, and I saw another one where they're doing the same sort of thing in Seaforth to send the resources over there. So I think it's a testament to social media that it's able to pull people together in times of tragedy like this. And
yeah, because usually you feel kind of, you know, you're awed by this, and you don't know if you can do anything, and the fact that people can share information, they pull together resources.
And that it doesn't need to be the official institutions that are the only ones who have to step in with the answers, that people today can take charge and mobilize themselves. And I don't know, you know, whether things are going to change significantly going forward in terms of how governments work, but you know, certainly the potential is there for people to become more active and be able to respond more quickly.
Yeah.
And in general, it just drives, again, towards more transparency. I mean, you know, people can't really hide actions.
Yeah. And we are actually headed into a provincial election in October. So it will be interesting to see the three political parties, how they step up and say, this is what we're going to do to make it right for the people of Goderich. I know that area is currently, I believe, a Liberal Party is holding that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens and falls out of that. I mean, in cases like this, it takes more than just a community and a few bucks throwing it back together. This is, from the pictures that I saw, it looks like it's going to be a major reconstruction.
Mm-hmm. Now, I always get my Canadian politics mixed up. This is the liberals that aren't liberal, or are these the liberals that are liberal? I get really mixed up with who's farther
right. This is the Liberal Party of Ontario.
Okay.
And the Liberals are more liberal than the Conservatives, so that although I think in recent years, both parties have been more central than extreme, because I think it's safer to play there, but the Conservatives are always more conservative than the Liberals.
And yet they're, by my sense, they're all considerably more liberal than your Democratic Party.
Right. Yeah, that's where it gets confusing.
Yeah.
And what about the Republican Party? Where would they be if you were to throw them on the same spectrum?
Oh, they'd be
further to the right.
way to the right.
Yeah. Tornado? Yeah, it's Obama's fault. Yeah. Oops, we're going down a dangerous track.
Okay. No politics.
So if we were to redirect just a little bit back to sort of public participation in politics, there was another piece of news this morning that followed the tornado in Goderich, and that was the passing of Jack Layton, who's the leader of the NDP party and was the first ever leader of the official opposition at the national level from that party. And so he had just been elected significantly displaced the Liberals as the official opposition.
And the Bloc Québécois.
And the Bloc. So major inroads in Quebec. And, of course, the Conservatives managed a majority government. And so that changes what we've had for a number of years, because they've had a minority for a number of years. But suddenly they have a majority, and the person who's designated or who comes into play as the official opposition is Jack Layton, his party has never had that position, and he's been battling cancer for a number of years, and so a month or so back he said, I'm going to have to step back to deal with things. But his approach had always been, you know, let's have a very reasoned, honest, nonpartisan approach to things, and so I think there was a potential there that a lot of people were feeling that to keep the majority government in check was going to be someone who would try and avoid the typical politics that happen. And that may have been a challenge for him and for his party. But I know this morning, starting at about a quarter to nine, suddenly took a little while, but Twitter was trending with Jack Layton and a lot of people, I think, lamenting his passing. So I'm wondering whether, you know, changing times, whether there will be more people who will participate in such a way to change the nature of politics and make it less partisan and more participatory. So that would be nice to see, you know, maybe as an homage.
Given what social media does and does open up the level of transparency, as we've seen with some of the instances in the United States with people being embarrassed publicly because of these type of things, maybe people will shy away from politics because of the openness and the transparency. I mean, in your country, you've had a couple of elected officials who've had to step down because of things that they've done in a different time and era.
Yeah, you would have never known about.
You'd never know about. Now, you know, there's people there with their camera.
It does
taking pictures of things as they happen.
It's like the setup that you have to be like this perfect being, because you know one fault in your career or your stature.
None of us are perfect.
Far from it. Yeah. Well, I wonder though. I mean, obviously, I mean, we're all folks in the middle of social media. How pervasive is it in normal culture? You know, when I was at Heather's, you know, I heard, you know, they were talking about farmers who were, you know, tweeters, you know, and that's how they stay in touch with conditions and economics, etc.
So we stay in touch in this house.
Yeah.
There are three floors. There are three of us. Each of us has a den on the different floor. And we twit and Skype back and forth.
Yeah,
you
but
think we get up and walk?
Yeah, but your wins or die. I mean, what about your neighbors or the people, you know, down the street?
How many Wi-Fi networks did you find when you came into this network, Doug? Was it amazing how it lit up?
Well, four or five of them.
How many were open?
None of them.
My
not
mom
now,
in,
but I mean, originally, you drive down the street and you'd see...
Oh, you do Linksys war driving.
And D-Link everywhere. And so people have come to understand
But my mom's in a condos building up across Cabana. And of all the units there, she knows of only two who don't have internet and don't actively use it. I mean, that's how they organize. And they're seniors, for heaven's sakes.
Good for you, Alana. Just rather than tweeting it out, I'll just throw it over the airwaves here.
Good one. So what are you excited about these days, Di?
Not excited as much as busy. I've been a part of a large-scale organization for a handful of years now, called Knowledge Ontario, and its main organizational thrust is to free up digital information and knowledge for all of Ontario. Has done so through substantial collaborative funding through government, through education, and has just made it so that databases, resources, digital archives, all of the tool sets that are needed have been in place, ready for people to do. Well, the wisdom of the last election saw that they rerouted some of the funding such that the choice has now been made to take large portions of what was free to everybody in Ontario and commercialize it. So I'm on the team who's working through the code to commercialize it. And you know what? That sucks. It has to happen because you can't bury it and let it die. It's critical. Stuff needs to happen. But to say, yeah, and now it's becoming pay-as-you-go, to me is eminently unfair. So that's what I'm involved in. I'm busy learning new coding languages as we find new ways of doing commercial underpinnings to things that I'd prefer to give away.
Are the historical elements going to be pay-for-play? Like we had talked at one point in time about the Marsh Collection, for example.
No, the digital artifacts, once they're in there, will be an open portal. What becomes pay is to use the tool set to get them in there.
Okay.
So people who are already in the queue are grandfathered in for free, and everyone else pays to get in. Once you're in, you're in full discovery portal. But it's wrong. I'm sorry, it's wrong.
So the cost doesn't go to the consumer, it goes to the person that's contributing the content. That's interesting.
So it goes to the toolkit user. Okay.
So I learned today that as you're driving around, you're telling me about Windsor's a pretty wired town.
It is wired. There's a large sonnet ring below this city.
I can feel like a vibe here.
Windsor Essex is one of the smart communities in the world.
Yeah. One of top seven. Has been 2 years in a row.
Top seven. And there's been an organization locally that has been very aggressively putting it together. And I believe Diana's had a major role with her work with one of her former employers.
In smart communities and pushing a lot of the educational band through it so that the participation is there. But what it means is when anything technically is being done in this region, be it infrastructure, network, or any kind of large-scale build, the thought is who else needs to do this and how can we do it together? It's not, don't tell them what we're doing. It's share and it's open.
Yeah.
So the casino gets in with the tool and die guys when dark fiber needs to be filled out to Oldcastle. And because they're all going to share the wiring, so let's pay the mile together. And if it's running through Windsor Hydro says, you know, we already have the tunnels there.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Now, if you could only run it out to my house, I'd be very happy.
Oh, honey, move in a little closer.
I could live with the type of internet access that I'm enjoying right now. I have
nice internet access.
You do. You got nice internet access.
Let's see,
I've seen
how far away are you, Doug?
Too far.
Too far.
How much Cat 5 can we get strung up from Dye's house?
You need a hawking device, honey, to pick up on my rooftop signal.
There we go. So I don't know if anybody's out there listening still on Twitter. On my status, it shows maybe 11 people. So.
Oh, cool.
So that's like a huge audience. I see Julia just tuned in, and I'll be visiting Julia tomorrow. And we're sitting here on the deck at Di's house. Look at that sunset, man.
Isn't that nice?
That's a glorious sunset. I've seen some great sunsets the last couple days.
Yeah. Well, tomorrow morning, if you want, 6 o'clock, we'll see the sunrise.
Take a picture for me, I think. I might get up for that. But,
you've actually had one of the more picturesque drives going through the North Shore of Lake Superior and coming through. That's just...
There was this one, it was a sunset when I was in Regina. It was Alec... I was at the dinner with Al Corus and his family, and coming back on the freeway, the sun was just on the horizon.
Oh, nice.
And I never seen a sunset like that. It was just like this burning, and I get some good sunsets in Arizona, but yep. This was just super intense because it was just below a line of clouds, and we were all kind of cameraless.
Oh!
Well, the iPhone really doesn't cut it on a good sunset.
No, it doesn't.
You get the exposure wrong.
You have to have your camera with you at all times.
But there's something special about watching a sun sink into a lake.
Yeah.
Right? And
or rise out of a lake.
We'll be rising out of the lake tomorrow morning.
Just absolutely spectacular view.
So for a noise professor tuning in, setup, is it raining or are you just near moving water?
Do you want me to unplug the fountain?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we do have... Zach has a good ear. There is a decorative fountain kind of gurgling in the corner.
If it's too much, I can kill it.
Yeah, I think it's just Zach's fine-tuned ears.
Okay.
Because
pouring rain.
He's just an awesome dude.
It's actually the sound of a canoe paddle in the lake.
There you go.
Can you distinguish fountain versus canoe paddle in the lake?
It's not the beavers softly treading and constructing?
That too.
It could be. This is Canada, eh?
There's actually a loudspeaker.
You didn't say A.
Yes, she did. There's a loudspeaker going on over there somewhere, too.
Oh, I thought that was just their echo. Zach likes the fountain. So
okay.
I
have a box.
I thought that we would talk a little bit about the story box, which I talk about incessantly to everybody and anybody I'm meeting with. So I do have to give a shout-out to the noise professor because he's the guy who built it for me. And I'm still waiting for your stuff to come in, Zach. But
I'm impressed that I'm seeing the story box.
We're seeing the box, and it glows in the dark. There are lights.
Yeah,
as Diane cool. reaches for her camera.
That's actually why I cut the holes in the top there for the lid, so the orange light might shine through. But I wanted to try an experiment and just give the explanation to you guys, and then maybe see what happens as maybe you look at some of the content on there. So. What we have, and most, your reaction was most similar to everybody else's when I, this is going to sound really terrible, when I take out my box, they say, oh, it's smaller than I thought. There's no innuendos there, okay, but.
I think I had one of those when I was in grade 4.
You had this little, like.
That little box for my lunch going to school.
It's a sub-sized lunch box, because you could never get a thermos in here.
A juice box would fit in a box.
Right, so. I am not the techie who can really totally explain it, but the basic parts are this white thing is called a dock star, and it has three USB ports and a network port. And what I understand is a lot of people use it for home network storage drives because apparently the dock star has a good amount of RAM on it, so that helps with the file transfer speed. And then plugged into one of the USB ports is a thumb drive. It's a 16 gig drive that has a running Python web server.
Oh, good.
Running right on here. And then the network is connected to this wireless transmitter.
Okay.
So when I powered it up, it's going to create a local network that you should see within, it's probably just coming up, mine's called Storybox Share Yours, which I can't join because I need the internet.
Okay.
To do this, but if you guys join,
will it pick up on an iPad or do we need a computer?
No, it'll pick up on an iPad. And you may have to trigger it once or twice. It seems to broadcast maybe a little bit less.
Settings, networks.
Yeah. So the network name is called
Storybox.
Yep.
There it is. Cool. It came up right away.
And what happens is if you open your web browser and try to go anywhere, basically it redirects all traffic request. To go to the web server that's on here. And,
hang on a second, I was looking at the Little League World Series.
Come on, Doug, concentrate with me.
I have the Pirate Box and Story Box here
you
in
do,
front of me. Learn
do.
More about the project.
Right, so that's the basic interface. And what it does is it's got a simple interface, so it's got a, and you can't do this from the mobile devices, that's one of the problems. But there's a form upload button. So you can upload from a computer any file that you have, or you can look at the content that's on there under number 3. So
cool. What's inside the story box?
Yeah, and when you look at the stuff, it's just a directory view.
That's it.
I'm not connected.
And what I've been doing is
you're connected.
Yeah, but I'm not getting wireless.
You don't need it because you're coming straight from there.
Yeah.
So just go to Safari now.
Okay.
And try to go to any web page.
So I've been.
I'm just cropping it out. So anyway, I'll just look over here.
If it should take a second, and then when you ask to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Where's your?
I'm just getting Doug hooked up here. I've been refiling some of the content into subdirectories. Like I have one for video, one for audio recordings, photos. And the idea, from what I understand, is invented by an NYU professor named David Darts, who was looking for a way for his students to easily anonymously share files in class and without having to deal with servers and logins, et cetera.
And firewalls and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so, okay,
and actually,
the
side benefit is if you have all your content on here,
so now you can go to three.
You're not on the open internet, so people just can deal with the content that's on there. And he pretty much calls it also, it became, I love this expression, an artistic provocation. But if you set this thing up in a public area,
you don't need that, Andy.
No, I know.
Okay.
I'm carry on.
He's doing something now.
I got three Wi-Fi networks here right now, and the one that I need right now is not the one that I'll need in a minute.
Okay.
But the idea is that if you put this in a public place,
people can.
Would people join a network named Pirate Box share freely?
Oh.
You might.
I might.
I'm thinking, I want to do some experiments when I have the time to sit for a couple hours in like a coffee shop or a student union. And I might do something like print out some cards and just get people say, I'm doing an experiment, just join this network and see what happens. But right now there's probably about 400 plus kinds of media things in there. Pictures, videos, some music, some audio recordings, a few documents. And I'm just asking people to upload anything that is that's done in this time period that I'm traveling, and I call it an internet, like a digital time capsule. Because
sorry, I just saw Nose Picker, so I went through and chose it, and son of a gun.
There is a picture of some guys picking their nose.
Yes.
That was actually in downtown Winnipeg. I took most of the stuff is mine, so I know it, but I'm curious, just as you're looking at the stuff, like what it means to look at this media that has no context and wonder what it is, or maybe try to speculate, or maybe draw some relationships between the things that you're finding on there. So, you know, I know because either I saw it come into my Dropbox or came in there. So knowing that not everybody would be where they could get to the story box, I set up a Dropbox so people could send me content. And that is at cogdogblog.com/storybox, the information. The other thing is it's fast on the network transfer. It's about, when I upload videos, it's doing about 3 to 5 megs a second. Because
so that's good. Yeah, you're just going direct.
Yeah. And one thing I'm just not curious or what I am curious about is to find out, you know, what happens when you get like 30 or 50 people on it. How it handles that, but you know, if the guy who invented it does it in a class, I imagine that's a fair number of people. And I don't know. Try it again. I don't know what.
What's interesting about this is that every picture's got a story behind it, and the thing is that only the person that took the picture knows the story.
Well, do you have to know the story?
And so we're sort of walking into the middle of a movie, and. Just like any time I see a picture, I'm wondering what happened before this picture took place and what happens after this picture took place. And I mean, it's the educator in me. I'm sitting there thinking, wow, this would be a great writing opportunity for the kids. With this huge directory of images, pick one and tell me the story that goes along with it.
That's what I'm thinking. Or use what you find in there to do a remix. You know, do a video out of 5 images and a soundtrack. Or do a 5-picture story, or find, you know, 4 things that have a common theme. And, you know, I like the part about people taking the content that's on here and creating something new, because they would be limited to just the stuff that's on there. But I know what you're saying. You know, I know the context. Well, that guy's ugly. You know, the other thing is you make up your own context.
Yeah.
You know, that one, the guy on the bicycle?
Mm-hmm.
That was in Boise, Idaho, and I took it because he was just going on the street with like this motorized bicycle.
Right.
And I thought that was funny. but he's smoking a cigarette. So some of the things are interesting because when you zoom in on the detail, there was one when I was doing this at Darcy Norman's house. There was someone did a panorama of an office, and I thought it was Darcy's because he posts a lot of those. And he was like, "No, that's not mine." So me and Darcy and his wife, we started exploring that image, trying to find clues as to who it might be. We zoomed way in on the screen to see if we could pick off a URL. The closest we found, there was a name badge from like a conference, and it said Brock University.
Cool.
And I thought it might have been Julia Forsythe because that's where she's from. And she says, "No, that's not mine." So there can be a little bit of detective work in that sort of thing if you're really curious to try to sense what the context would be.
And so, what's the total amount of artifacts that you have in there now?
I think it's about 400.
Wow.
It's mostly photos, about 200 some photos, but I got about 60 videos. I do a lot of audio recordings as I meet people.
Right.
I also do a little bit of like secret pocket recordings.
Sound sampling.
Sound sampling. Some ambient things.
That's interesting to do. I did a little bit of that when I was traveling with my sons last week, and you know, we're coming out of something, and I thought they're going to be talking about what we've just experienced,
yeah.
So I'll just capture it and just, you know, turn on the audio recorder on
without
my iPhone.
Without any prompts, so you just
catch and just have little conversations, and it's interesting to...
Somebody uploaded a video recently that, like, we were just watching this, I think at Heather's house. Someone recorded, they were, like, going up the stairs in the parking garage, and they kept opening the doors and closing, and you never saw the person. You saw their hand for a little bit. And that's interesting. I put one on there last night when I was at Heather's farm. Mike took me inside the pig barn. And when he opened the door for one of the, whatever you call it, the room where the pigs are, and they get a sense you're there, they like, they have like a stampede away from you. So I got a video of the pigs running away.
from the sty door.
From the sty. You know.
Things you can't see in Arizona. Right?
Things you can't see in Arizona. So, you know, I throw in a lot in there because I'm just out there, you know, going to new places every day, but you know, I'm starting to get more stuff come in, and to me, I like to see, you know, a lot more things flow into the box, because I think the more in there, the more interesting it will be. And I don't know what I will do with all this stuff at the end.
I had been wanting to ask you, when you have this at the end of your 6 months of traveling, what is your hope or your goal or your outcome? What are you doing?
I got 4 months to come up with one, but
okay.
No, it's going to emerge. It will go online. In some form, so
okay.
I might foresee a site where it's like it's set up in a database, and maybe I get people doing some tagging to help sort of do some drawing relationships between the media or allowing people to do remixes. I might try turning it into some sort of video documentary or make the website a documentary. I'd like to do some workshops on it. I think the idea of say this is all the content you have to work with. Create something out of it. The other thing is, on the interface, there's a public chat area. So there might be some activities you could do, because you can put, you know, a local URL for the content.
Right.
And you could say, okay, here's the prompt for our discussion or our story. Let's put the picture of the guy on the bicycle here. And people can take turns, you know, building the story out in the chat. Or you know, they could take turns contributing the next piece of media that they want people to engage with. But yeah, Di, I'm not too sure. I'm kind of making this up as I go along. The piece about the stuff I'm asking people to share that's not posted anywhere means that the only place you can see it is if you're in the vicinity of the pirate box.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where all the content lives. So when I take this away, you guys won't be able to see all of it until the end when I put it together.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting experiment and tracking. You know, similar to the pens, having a way to track what comes out of the pieces. I mean, right now you're primarily collecting pieces, right? Because there's not really a way, if I could probably pull down a couple of the pictures and write a story about them.
Right.
But unless I can give it back to you in the next hour or so, that piece is not going to travel along with the collection. So,
yeah. And that might be something that takes place on the web afterwards.
Yeah.
The stuff that people build from it.
And then be able to say, okay, here are all the different pieces that have been generated by this one particular artifact.
Right.
And you know, it would be interesting to track how, you know, different pieces may be provoke different kinds of responses. I mean, this is a collection of artifacts. Which ones draw people in? I mean, it would be a great experiment just to sit and watch for a couple of years and see where does it go and what comes out of it, and who buys in, who participates. What kinds of things do people do with it?
And you know, we were talking about, you know, you're talking about some issues with your classroom and your students being able to do things online. I mean, this could be an ideal, you know, solution for some activities where you want students to either, you know, assemble media or use media that you provide and not, you know, be out on the open mm-hmm. internet and mm-hmm. have all the activities.
So they have a more focused experience.
Yeah.
And maybe a real-world experience in that, you know, there are constraints in terms of the resources that you have to work with, and you know, so there's always some benefit to contriving things like that. But I do like the apparent ease with which it could be set up and implemented without requiring, you know, a significant investment of resources or time from an IT department. And, you know, sometimes the hoops that you have to jump through even to get something going are prohibitive, and so it would be interesting to do you have a sense of the cost to assemble that?
I'm just tweeting Zach,
because maybe $4 or $5 for the box.
I think the Dot Star, I can't remember if it's like $20 or if it's up to maybe a little bit more now.
But maybe $100 to put the whole thing together?
I would think so. I'll hopefully Zach or, I don't know if Grant Potter's listening, because they both have built one. Because what I was actually thinking about, and I don't know if there is a class anywhere that's appropriate for in CIS, like, you know, it would do both sort of hardware, software side, and creativity. But mm-hmm. your first group project is to build the pirate box,
mm-hmm.
and then you'd have some activities once it's built to take it out and collect the media and mm-hmm. do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a nice class.
I'm thinking of two Peters that I've dealt with before that would jump on something like this too had they not listening. Were you in Minnesota on your trip?
No.
Okay, because I swear I know this person in this picture here.
Who?
But she lives in Minnesota.
Oh, those are some educators I met. She is from...
Her name's not Molly?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know her. She did the Google Q workshop in
Small World.
Oh, okay.
She runs the Google Teacher Academy.
Did I meet her? Was she in Toronto?
Yeah, she was in my session all day.
Yes. Oh, well, that's... There's...
Small World,
Alan.
There's...
And
there's
Steve Denbo, and
there's Vicky,
and
Vicky, there's
Vicky Davis, and
and
Adam. That's Adam. What's his name?
So this is Bella? Molly here.
Yeah,
and is this Steve here? This is Steve here.
Yeah,
and who's this?
That is
and this is
I forget her name.
Oh, we know
that's Teach a Kid.
From down in Florida.
Yeah,
right?
We break away from the podcast while Andy and Alan have
we're
a
just
private
identifying this picture
around my iPad.
What I find is interesting is
your iPad
looking
has got a really hefty case on it. Oh, you've
got
a whole
keyboard
on this.
Yes,
you're looking at
wow,
a picture, digital shared picture, and you're identifying people. But immediately, if you don't know their name, you're identifying them by their handle.
Yeah.
And we are becoming known by our handles.
Yeah, we'll get rid of names and just have handles.
Well, that's just it. Means you get to pick your own name now.
Well, there's a great story. So I was in Seattle doing my own part of the trip, and Steve Denbo, who I know, noticed on TripIt that I was in Seattle and he was going there for a meeting. So he tweeted me and says, "Hey, you know, I'll be here. Let's do a meetup." So
cool.
And you know, he and Vicky and because I teach a kid because my mind's blank. I'll kill myself for forgetting her first name. They were there for something at Microsoft, and Molly and Andrew, I think, were there for something for Google Teacher Academy.
Okay.
So it just, they were all in the same place.
Snowball.
And they just got together for some drinks, and you know, I brought this thing out, and we talked about it, and I think it was Molly who did the group picture and then uploaded it to the Dropbox.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Something that I'm just reminding myself is that the Dropbox is not connected to anything.
Yeah.
It's got a battery in it, so you could use it with students. You could take them outside. You could be in a place, and as long as they had a device that allowed them to upload
from batteries, you know, you're completely separate and off the grid, and yet
you can do it with your
you're still connected. Yeah.
The battery is you don't have to do the battery if it actually you can run off an AC adapter, but I added the battery because I wanted to be able to do this kind of thing. And, and this little this X-Pal thing, I think it, I've gotten about 4 hours, 3 to 4 hours out of it.
Cool.
Which is pretty decent.
So tomorrow you're going to do some pictures. Do you have any plans for what you're doing for the trip? The trip down to the river tomorrow.
We're seeing stuff blow up. That's all I heard.
Yeah. The agencies on both sides of the border, 65 agencies, police, ambulance, fire services, security, Homeland Security, RCMP, are having a joint international, whatever you want to call it, mock river invasion problem. Blowing up a boat, having responses.
Okay. And how are you going to capture the moment?
Well, I'll have my camera with me, which is both still and video.
Okay.
Usually what I do when I'm out, though, I mean, sometimes I see some things, I say, that's just weird stuff or a street scene that I want for the box. Sometimes I'll just take a lot of multiple pictures, so that might, it, you know, I can stretch and break, but there's no really any rules. I mean, if someone uploads something that's on the internet, that's fine, but I've definitely, like, you know, if I have a couple extra, I'll upload, you know, the better ones to Flickr, but I'll put, you know, just as good ones
on the box.
And, you know, lately I'm doing usually about 5 to 10 photos a day, and if I have a chance to do some audio. So what I've done is sort of a prompt question for the audio, like I did with Rod today, is, you know, I say, you know, I'm doing this as sort of a digital time capsule, and, like, let's say someone finds this audio 100 years from now, you know, what should they really know about this time or this place for you? So I try to get people talking about what's really important to them, or what's really special about the place they live, and that's just kind of an opener, and every time I've done that, people kind of go to something bigger and just come out with a gem of an expression that really does, I think, say something about this time period.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, Rod just, he's like, well, that's a really hard question. And then he said something, and, you know, he started talking about the bit of the, you know, with the connection that's going on. And he had this expression about, I'm going to forget it now, because I had a, like, title. It was like the perfect saying, it's just something about an awareness of otherness among us, which you know, my sense is that you know, of being able to reach out and learn more about other people than we might be able to, you know, not only in our community but outside. And, you know, he talked about some examples. We had this great discussion of we talked about sort of the way towns are designed, you know, how artificial it is, so many towns are on this grid. You know,
but it was planned originally in response to vehicles, right?
So
cars.
Yeah, and so, he says just like a classroom.
So how might things be planned differently going forward once social media is sort of
like
predominant
a park,
everywhere?
Like a park in the middle, you know, places where people gather, you know, designed around people and not around vehicles. And we just talked about the virtues of, like, designing around things that are curved and not rectilinear.
Sorry, I was just trying to stop.
Oh, I thought you found something interesting.
No, I was just thinking that you've got a unique opportunity if these pictures do what you're planning to do tomorrow, because you'll have both Canadian and American civil and authorities out there doing what they do, which is demonstrating how they protect borders and so on. And isn't that sort of a sign of our times? I mean, given what's happened in Libya today and what's happened in the Middle East over the last little while, maybe that is a story of our times, is that we are very protection about our borders. I mean,
for
the long...
I wasn't brave enough to interview the Canadian custom guys who tossed my van for half an hour.
But, I mean, for the longest time, we bragged that the U.S.-Canadian border is the longest, friendliest border in the world. Well, given what's happened over the last little while, it's hardly... friendly anymore. If anybody's passed back and forth and go through,
but our border is an old artifact.
Yeah,
like when you look at how information can transmit across borders instantly, and you know, politics being a significant reflection that borders borders
tend to define or be defined by differences in politics.
Yeah.
You know, if the potential for politics to be adjusted by, you know, I think, you know, historically we've probably had a very passive approach to our politics in our country. And it may be that, you know, there's an opportunity for more people to be more actively engaged without being significantly put out in being engaged, and it could change how things function. And
remember that next time you're crossing the border, explain that to the guard on the other side.
Yeah, it was just last week, but it was okay.
Yeah,
we were good.
Somebody did ask me recently if like I could characterize like the difference of what I'm hearing from Canadian folks versus the American folks, and I'm not doing a scientific sample. You know?
Yep.
I'm seeing my friends, and it's also been an exercise for me in talking to strangers, which has been a little bit of a growth. So just approach someone and say, hey, I'm doing this. But, you know, I couldn't really come up with a good, firm answer about, you know, differences. And I've been mainly purposely trying to go to small towns and just...
I wonder how many of the differences are in your own mind. Like, are there significant differences that we perceive as opposed to actually being significant differences? Because, I was down in Washington. Every single person that I encountered was incredibly friendly.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's part of the nature of
town. That's like Canada. Yeah. Everybody's friendly here.
So maybe most people are naturally friendly unless they have some reasons to feel guarded. Or they're
provoked.
To be friendly?
Or they're provoked.
How can you provoke me to be friendly?
To be not friendly.
Ah. Yeah.
Canadians are really courteous drivers.
I'm not going to say any more, but you're not driving significantly east of here, are you?
I was going to say, when I started in British Columbia, I could have sworn that nobody passed. Because I didn't see anybody pass. So I got out on the highway, and like I took an opportunity, and I went around, and a couple cars followed me, and then I got into Alberta, and I got my first finger, and I figured it got a little bit more rougher as I went.
But maybe that was just an individual. It could just be myths of, you know.
And you're right, it's so easy to make generalizations about that. I can't characterize Americans or Canadians, because I haven't seen them all. I'm still sampling.
Mosquitoes are coming out to our deck house.
Are they?
I haven't noticed any.
I haven't noticed any mosquitoes since
I've
been
in Canada.
You're
the target, ha-ha.
You were scratching.
I was warned about mosquitoes, and, you know, first of all, I haven't seen mosquitoes. I haven't seen a moose. I didn't see any bears.
Jeez.
So you took 3 days to travel through northern Ontario, traveling primarily, on the Trans-Canada Highway.
Yeah.
And it runs right along the north shore of Lake Superior for a good chunk.
Yeah.
With lots of hills. I've never seen any moose or any significant wildlife along there.
Yeah, I know, you have to get off the highway.
And so you're moving fairly quickly there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, maybe you need to take a little detour. You know, take a couple of days and just...
So go back up there, would you?
I'm going to do a loop, and then I'm going to come back and do it right. You
know? Okay.
And then maybe do it again.
That's always good. I mean, go get the lay of the land, figure out where you want to go back and see again, and... Go back and spend some time there.
It was long, but it was a really magnificent journey.
Oh, is it my turn, Doug?
All right, we've degraded into playing Words with Friends. See, I'm getting a cue that it's time.
I need to
wrap
go on
this.
The record that Alan's photo from earlier this evening, where Doug and I both had our phones out. Doug had retweeted or responded to someone, and I was merely mentioned and was distracted by my phone, and so Alan just happened to take a picture at that point. But it sounds like Doug is now...
Sounds pretty lame to me.
He's waving his iPad in my face, and he's telling me that it's my turn.
It's your turn, man. You're holding up my game.
So my choice to go into Words with Friends right now at this instant is my choice and my choice alone.
That's okay. It's your choice.
I think we've been sitting on the wavelengths long enough.
I was going to say we've been over the hour.
I've lost my connection to the pirate box. I'm back on the internet again.
Hey, I'm going to put it. Okay, I have collections of interesting plays from Words with Friends games that Doug and I have had.
That would be
and
worth sharing.
Those would be little things that we could put
they
in there.
They would be. Like some pretty patterns.
That diagonal game we tried one day.
That's actually pretty sad when you think about it, but yes, it was.
Well, we got to the point
where... It's sad to me. I love it.
I kept it, too.
We got to a point where we needed to create some kind of an artificial constraint in the game just to change it up and make it interesting, and said, we'll see if we can do a ladder of three-letter words, and we were successful. Doug's got it right there.
I love that.
And on the one hand, it wasn't necessarily as easy as we thought it might be, but it wasn't nearly as hard as we thought it
would be. Can you use all those words in a few sentences?
Oh, I'm sure we could if we
actually,
were.
My gal, now that I look at it, it's the password to Diane's wireless.
No, it's not enough characters.
Here, pass it over here and I'll turn them into a haiku. This is like fridge magnets.
All right, right? We're nicely devolving here.
What does het mean?
Before we close out the airways, we have to give the closing hymn. You guys know how it goes?
I know how it goes.
All right. All right, you ready?
So 3, 2, 1.
DS106 Radio for life!
All right, thanks for tuning in, all 11, 12, 9, 5, 6 of you. And I'm going to fade out a little bit, maybe with some more music. If I can get this darn thing queued up.
And I'm glad you...